Hello, Scorpio, and welcome to part two of Cosmophilia. You belong here for Scorpio Rising and Scorpio Sun. So we left off. Where do we leave off? Well, we're talking about Saturn, I think, quite a bit in the last episode. And the feeling of Saturn leaving your sign is likely to be a feeling of relief, a sense of a pressure taken off, or a sense of responsibility. And I would suggest that you treat that a little like when you resume use of an appendage after an injury. There's that phase where the healing process is mostly done, but you have to, you know, step consciously on that thing, your knee, your ankle, your shoulder, to, you know, learn confidence again, and as well to, you know, test it out and test out the strength of that and build that back up. It is a confidence building process, and I would suggest that Saturn changing signs is an invitation to that confidence building process, and that you consider the time between now and September 15th, 2015, when Saturn finally does leave your sign for the second time entering Sagittarius, as that kind of trial phase of testing out what I've been describing as your internalized Saturn principle. Now, when Saturn changes signs, it enters your second house, and the second house is the available resources house, and it's also, in your case, the available spiritual resources, because you have Sagittarius on this house, and it's one of the descriptors of Scorpio that's not in any textbook that I've read, but that descriptor says that your value system is inherently founded on a spiritual grounding, that in reality, love is more important than money, honoring people's freedom is more important than jealousy and control, and your own freedom from constraint and from being bound by commitments that you don't want to be in is quite high on your list of priorities. Sagittarius is one of the most no-bullshit signs of the zodiac, and you have this on your second house, arguably the second most important sign besides your own in describing you. And there has been quite a mashup going on in Sagittarius over the years. Pluto has been through the territory. Pluto, your modern ruling planet, came through the territory between approximately 1995 and 2008, a very distinct time in history. And that was very good practice for you, because then what happened next is many other points were discovered and or named and or found to be and or entered Sagittarius and are having a similar action as Pluto, but nothing is quite Pluto. So you've been through the real self-esteem trial by fire. Now comes the focusing filter part of the self-esteem part. It comes down to living out a grounded form of self-esteem and having stability on the level of knowing that your actual grounding, the actual space that you occupy in consciousness, and that the real value that you have is something that feels like it is a bit beyond this world. And I would say that Sagittarius is a fantastic sign to have as your second house, because it describes a full spiritual bank account. It describes a resource that cannot run out. You might, if you have access to it, listen to the Sagittarius reading, where I talk about the presence of the Great Attractor and the galactic center in Sagittarius. These are, let's just say, gifts that keep giving good things, and that you have a lot of mojo coming through this house of available resources. But the action of Saturn, the trial run through September, the sign change, is about stabilizing your contact with those resources and really learning how to make them real, how to ground them in the world of people, places, things, and choices, and to come from that place. Basically, it is the place of knowing that you have a kind of higher ground, because the things that are important to you really actually are things that should be important to you, and that is a solid example for others to follow for what is important and what should be important to them. Now, on the theme of self-esteem, let's shift to your career house. You have Leo on your 10th. That is the career house. It's the one that sort of points straight up on the astrological chart, a little bit to the left. So that's house 10. It's an angular house. The house, the sign involving house 10 is a very potent point of orientation for anyone, especially if they aspire to do anything at all beyond what they're currently doing or beyond what they were told they could do. And house 10 is the house of your reputation, and you have Leo there. And the implication of Leo on house 10 is that you feel very good about what you have accomplished and what you're capable of accomplishing. The problem with having Leo there is that you might feel a little bit too good about it for the sake of establishing credibility with others. There are times when that Leo midheaven just shines through. Generally, they are in times of achievement, and they're also in times when you are trusted for, you know, who you are, what you have to offer. But when it comes time to be reviewed, when it comes time to question yourself, when it comes time to, let's say, shift positions and have to reestablish credibility with perhaps a new organization, that can be challenging because your internal compass says, ah, well, but I am this person who is clearly as good as gold. Anyone can see that, except that's typically not how the world works. The world works in more of the show me, the real world, not just the world of Kim Kardashian and various other business enterprises, works in the world of show me the worth that you have by what you do, what you can actually accomplish. And there we have a clue in a couple of different forms, particularly one of the most prominent points in your career house is industria. This is a really interesting point with a good amount of history to it. And the glyph looks like Saturn. So the implication is that there is some Saturnian quality here. And when we think of the industrialists who are, you know, what we might associate with the point industria and with industry, we find out that these people, the initial industrialists, were very persistent people. They stopped at nothing, and in particular, they never stopped at failure. The ones who made it to where they are, many of them had many setbacks, serious setbacks. I have written about some of these people, and I make a study of them. And while I don't like the ultimate results of what they've done, the ultimate results of their work, I have come through many years of writing about industry and industrialists, having great respect for the tenacity of the industrialists, the quality of original thinking, the quality of using waste product as primary product, knowing how to take anything and turn it into something that basically can be used or sold. And many of the most successful, for example, chemical products were originally considered waste that was dumped. I think industry has lost some of that ingenuity today and is not being as efficient as it once was. But if we go back to these earlier industrialists, that efficiency, that ability to use waste product as a primary product is really a very important thing to have. In addition, there is strong messaging coming through your 10th house that three things shine out, one of which is a sense of politics, a sense of really being able to work within a power structure and knowing how to treat people to show that you look up to them, but at the same time, there is a feeling of human-to-human, level-ground kind of contact. This is a little bit tricky to do because there is a need, I think, to show respect at all times, and one of the qualities of Leo on the Midheaven is a regal quality, but I suggest that that regal quality translate to a noblesse oblige quality, the quality of making sure that you recognize that as someone of considerable talent and value and perhaps influence, that you recognize the achievements and accomplishments of others, and that you treat people who are not as accomplished or as well-placed as you are with respect, and that you have a quality of bringing them up and of extending a hand to them so that you're never really giving the feeling of being above anyone, and to the extent that you are above one, that you give them a hand and help them up, and that you might even, you know, help push them higher and as high as they go. So there's this political factor. In addition, there is a powerful emphasis on justice and fairness that comes along with being what I would call astrologically a person of nobility in terms of your profession. And that sense of fairness and justice be a thing that you make sure is essential to your political, corporate, and professional philosophy, that that you very subtly perhaps position yourself as someone to whom others can go for justice. Third major point coming from this house is that it would help if you recognized that success is a kind of a conspiracy. Success is not something that just happens, and it is not something that anyone does alone. There is always a conspiracy, sometimes a vast conspiracy, to make anything work. And the combination of the sense of justice that you can easily embody and the sense of politics and protection that you can easily embody will feed beautifully into what I would describe as a conspiracy of success that you are taking part in, and that you are bringing others into this conspiracy, and that anyone you encounter is potentially part of that, as are you part of theirs. The karma of assisting people to get where they need to be, to do what you can to assist others, to basically miss no opportunity to help that you can possibly take, will be very positive karma for you, and it will position you in a way that signals to others that you are on their side and that we are all playing for the same team. And that's really the image that would be extraordinarily helpful for you to project as you reach for success. Now, there are always ups and downs in this success game, and my sense is that the ups and downs will be smoothed over by your insistence on claiming your true value and then also working affirmatively to help establish and build the value of other people. In other words, though success is often viewed as a horizontal, a vertical movement where you go upward, right, up the ladder of success, I would suggest that you treat success on a horizontal plane where we are all working together toward the same basic goal. That, to me, is really one of the things that is the most glaringly lacking from most society. Most people don't invest energy in helping others succeed. And I think that one of the things that you can do to establish your own sense of inclusion, your own sense of belonging, is to go out of your way to make sure that others feel that they do belong. One thing about your chart on two different accounts is that you have an exceptionally strong sense of family. Now, family has come under hard times in our era. It has really been under siege since the post-World War II era, where we're really verging on, 100 years post the extended family, which is really the way that humanity is supposed to live. And it is something that, has been under siege by industrialism all along, but there still was the commonplace occurrence of people living in little tribes known as the extended family. And that is very important to you to have that as a value, and it is something that would help you feel right at home. But now you're older than you were, and it's not so easy for you to just sort of slip into the tribes of other people. It's more like it's now time for you to be the godfather or the godmother and to establish your own tribe, and also expand that to a kind of humanism where your dominant philosophy of life is a philosophy of family, which extends beyond our normal concept of family to the extended family of tribe or family of choice. Now, there are two major places that this comes through in your chart, and I think that it would be cool to know about them, to know, be able to have kind of a fix on them so you can remember this about yourself. The ninth house in astrology is the house of one's spiritual connection. It works in your second house too, which is a very positive thing for you. But the ninth house, the house associated traditionally with Sagittarius and the quote-unquote natural chart, for you is the sign Cancer. The sign Cancer is the sign of nurturing, nourishment, inclusion, family, and home. And so this is saying that ultimately your real religion, your organic, natural religion, is the religion of family. It is the religion of the gathering. It is the religion of we are in this together and we will stick together as a family. And because it is a religion for you and not just something that you do on Sundays or on Christmas Day, that would be helpful to practice it all the time, meaning every minute and with everyone, and to practice a kind of inclusiveness of everyone that you meet in some way. I do advise that people have limits on how much bullshit they'll take, so I'm not saying that you need to take abuse in any way or will in any way benefit from having your resources exploited, but short of that, living in a way that weaves tribalism, in a way that weaves connection and contact, and that fosters an encounter on even ground with other people, as many as you can include, and making choices and doing things that will kind of ferment that, that will bring that together, that can include social events. And your home is, by the way, a very important place for this. And this leads to the second location in the chart, where we see this true grounding on the level of family. And that's your fourth house. In astrology, the fourth house is the house of security. It is the house of your emotions. It is the house of the impact of your childhood on your adult emotional body. And you have Aquarius here. And Aquarius is the sign of groups. It is very appropriate, since the family is the first group that we encounter. It's mommy, daddy, baby, sibling. Then you stick in a couple of maybe grandparents or aunts and uncles. And the child growing up from a pre-verbal state has a cosmology that they've established, that this group is their group, and that you're in this group. Now, you've always had a kind of a water bug relationship with this, like skating along the surface of this, because as part of your Aquarius heritage on the fourth house, you strive to be an individual at the same time as you strive to be part of and genuinely need inclusion in the experience of the group and of family. And to the extent that this has been a needlessly tense relationship, or perhaps you needed to go through the tension of that relationship to both establish your independence and then at the same time to establish your interdependence, that can be relaxed. You can relax that tension now and recognize that there's no way that you really can be subsumed by or swallowed by any group, including your family, but rather you exist as a distinct individual. You have been through enough that your power of individuation is pretty much unassailable at this point. There's no way that someone is going to convince you that you're not yourself, therefore you are part of this, or in order to be part of this, you need to give up yourself and, you know, join the cult of whatever it might be. That is just clearly not going to happen. You will be part of any group as a distinct individual. And I'm not just saying this based on the fact that you have Aquarius on the fourth house. I'm saying this based on the fact that you have Aquarius on the fourth house, and Aquarius has been through some mighty transits going back in this approximately 20-year phase that I would consider the modern era of human civilization, say sort of like the dawning of the internet or in the mid-1990s. In that 20 years, you have been through a lot that has compelled you to focus your individuality at the same time you focus on your ability to work with and to include and to be included. But I'm thinking now that the main thing that you can do to let go of any residual tension or residual misgivings or lack of trust is simply to experiment with it, to simply do it, to simply show up at a family gathering as absolutely yourself, and don't worry what anyone else thinks. What they think is their thing. And this would include any time that you are in a group environment. The thing about having Aquarius on the fourth house is that your sensation of inclusion in a group is going to be the main thing that helps you determine whether you are safe. Now, this is interesting because, you know, your sign is ruled by Mars, and there are many other things that stand out about you as being someone not to fuck with and as being someone who is distinctly your own person no matter what anyone says, thinks, or does. Except that your consciousness is grounded into this sign where if there's not some actual tangible sensation of being included, you can start to feel really pretty edgy. And I'm thinking that you don't need to feel that the experiment can go in the direction of letting yourself be and letting these people be and recognizing that there is actually no way to compromise your distinction, your distinctiveness, your absolutely being you, and that's it for all eternity. All right, now picking up on the Aquarius theme, we're going to do the Western portion of the chart that talks about relationships, and I think that in some ways covers the whole chart. The Western portion of the chart for you consists of Aries, Taurus, and Gemini. This is the what's sometimes called the zone of projection. It is the region of the chart that's furthest away from your sign. So it's basically the house opposite yours, that's Taurus, and then the adjoining ones, Gemini and Aries. And Aries is the sixth house, that's work, and hence it represents work relationships. Taurus is the seventh house, it represents direct one-on-one partnerships. And then the eighth house represents partnerships where resources are exchanged. Now, you do a lot of finding yourself in your work, and there has been a kind of revolution going on in your workplace that may have been rather difficult to keep up with. That's been facilitated by Uranus being in Aries since early 2011, with a brief foray in 2010. And so since 2011, there's been this sensation of things changing very fast around you at work, which also means in your own personal work patterns. And what this has done is it's pushed the issue of individuality and group relationship yet again. There's a theme developing here where there's this inclusiveness issue and this individuality issue when it comes to associations with other people. And so you are in a position of having to find yourself at the same time as you are finding your role within the association of people that you work with. Now, there is an associated transit, Pluto in the third house, and it has a very simple message about this. Focusing your ability to communicate, particularly in writing, is the very essence of being able to make contact with these people that you work with. What I have in my notes here is Pluto in the third, learn how to express yourself as if your life depends on it. Reveal your logic. Okay, so that's in two parts. The learn how to express yourself in writing and in words as if your life depends upon it is Pluto in the third house. It's in Capricorn. This is requiring a change of pattern of how you communicate. Reveal your logic is the Capricorn part as well. People understand you if you reveal your logic. I had a conversation this morning with someone whose work is published to the Planet Waves website, and they had a request for something. They wanted me to do something with their copy, but the reason never got across to me. So I'm just thinking this is a matter of principle. It's a matter of some idea that they want. And then the person revealed their logic. They said, if you do this, I'll be able to do that. And I said, ah, sold. Good. End of discussion. I'll do it. All I needed was the logical piece. I was not interested in the person arguing their position. I was not interested in principles. I knew I had the power, because I could do whatever I wanted, not print the copy. I was free to do whatever. I'm just looking for reasoning. I'm looking for some simple logic. And there are lots of people who feel like they don't have to reveal their logic. There's no need for them to do that. Their actions make so much sense. You should just know their logic. Ah, well, I'm saying learn how to reveal your logic and learn how to express yourself and make sure that others understand you. There's two facets to this, because on one hand, you really bring a lot of innovation to what you're doing, and that in some ways defies the need for logic. It should stand on its own, we would think. But at the same time, there's another part of the aspect pattern that's saying, get the verbal piece down, get the logic piece down. Be able to be clear about your motives, about the steps involved, about the goal. Give things names, name processes and procedures, and make sure that you are flexible in that process. If you name a process or a procedure, always be open to the next better name of that process that comes along. And while we're at it, the ways to revise that process to simply make it more streamlined and clearer or easier or more adaptive to the actual environment. So you definitely have a kind of a stellar quality, particularly around your work, but there's a few things that are saying, okay, we want to ground this in forms of humility like clear communication, not the frat-hazing type of humility, but rather just the knowledge that to be powerful, you must be clear. To be powerful, you must work with others, and clarity will help you work with others. To be seen as an upstanding member of the community, it helps to be one, and the being one comes from making sure that you are the local representative of truth and justice, and that you understand that we're all in this whole thing together. This will actually work for you. This will actually shift your reality to the extent that you're not already doing it, which you may very well be doing it, will shift your reality such that you are able to expand the circle of people who are mutually supportive of one another, and I would propose quite potentially to great success. A lot of this is rooted in your resources. This whole story, by the way, is the fire signs. I would pay particular attention this year astrologically to anything involving the fire signs and learning the nature of the fire signs, really getting down what this whole fire sign thing is in terms of its passion and ability to manifest ideas, but also its need for stability. And Saturn joining fire signs this year is going to provide some of that stability for all of the fire signs. So that takes care of one angle. Leo gives you stability as long as you bring that industrial quality to it, that sense of persistence. And then when you are working in groups with others, make sure that your sense of your own innovation is tempered by the humility of communication and of listening and of wanting to establish clarity. One other point on the level of your most intimate relationships, there definitely seems to be a shift that is going on, a very long-term shift. That's indicated by the presence of a vastly important outer planet. And I say that knowing I've mentioned a lot of outer planets, but the outer planet I'm talking about that's now entered your opposite sign is the first planet ever discovered beyond Pluto. So it is the one that said there is another world of possibilities beyond this previous bottom line of Pluto, where we were also kind of trapped in this, well, I don't quite know how to describe the sense of being trapped in Pluto, but this new critter, QB1, it's called, doesn't even have a name, small little world, and it's currently entering Taurus. And what this is saying is that the concept of a traditional relationship is shifting. It's shifting in the world in very big ways, but it's also shifting for you. And the thing to connect to in any person, I believe, based on this transit, for maximum love, growth, and relational satisfaction is the healing piece, the healing quality that the relationship has. That, in my view, though I am something of perhaps the only anti-romantic Pisces that is walking the face of the earth, I'm way too practical for romance, is to recognize that relationship exists with a purpose, and that purpose is the stabilizing factor. I don't believe it's really love. I think that, if anything, trust is more important, but even deeper than love and trust is a sense of purpose that exists as the common reality field, the grounding field that allows you to have stability in the relationship, but also to have a conduit where there is purpose. I don't know any other word except to say that. Normally, the purpose of our relationships is anything but purpose in the real sense of purpose. It's a, you know, there's often drama that's associated with relationships, and there's sex, but we're not allowed to say that sex is the purpose of the relationship. If you went on Facebook and said, you know, I've got this new relationship and the purpose of the relationship is we have great sex, that wouldn't necessarily be popular, which is an indicator of why, if your purpose in a relationship is great sex, you know that that's your purpose. And by the way, given the association between the creativity aspect of your chart, that constant kind of magnetism to the creative solution, and the art piece, and then the sex piece, and the passion aspect, all coming through Pisces, by the way, to be honest about that purpose, to be honest that a sexual purpose can and must, if it is true, be the stated purpose, would be very helpful. QB1 has a lot to do with sexual healing, particularly healing traumas that are kind of emotional traumas that are encrypted in the body. QB1 holds up a very powerful mirror of healing, and there are associations with using mirrors as healing tools in solo and in relationships that are associated with QB1. And the ultimate down, deep, deep, deep at the bottom relationship message of QB1 is that relationship must foster relationship with yourself. This is a concept that's floating around, currently unpublished in this other project I've got called Book of Blue. But the concept is coupling. Only coupling is not about coupling with another person. Coupling is about making the inner connection with yourself and making sure that, you know, we're working toward aspiring, toward reaching and setting a purpose of connecting with yourself in a way that is inseparable. And then that self-to-self relationship becomes a model of your interpersonal relationships. Usually this is done the other way. I recognize that in the Gestalt tradition, for example, interpersonal relationship is used as a modality for getting closer to yourself. However, I'm just making a slight revision of that, or a complete inversion. And what I'm suggesting is that your relationship to yourself becomes a means of modeling relationships with others. Guaranteed, we have interaction with others before we are in that coupled, inwardly connected state. And here is my proposal, that you employ your relationships consciously as a means of getting to know yourself and to facilitate that contact. Simply put, this would say that the relationships that wherein you feel good about yourself are the ones to pursue, and the relationships wherein you do not feel good about yourself, or where you feel severed from yourself in some way, or alienated or separated, are the ones to question, first of all, to really put them under the microscope for a while, and to not hesitate to associate with other people. At least know how everyone influences how you feel about yourself. There certainly is some environmental factor here, but the presence of this outer planet, largely unexplored and unthought of by astrology, is to guide you in the direction of this inner contact being the basis of all healthy relationships, this inner marriage that you have. Okay, I'm going to let this all rest right now, and I'll be returning to your sign when I come around and do the written portion. I would suggest that you check out the readings for the fire signs for all matters related to work, fire signs being Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius. And you'll hear I've made references to various things going on in those signs, and you can just fit that into the scheme as if you are, you know, specifically searching for information about work patterns. And then for interpersonal relationships, check out Taurus and Gemini. And I will definitely come back to Gemini in the written portion. I know I have not touched it here, but we are running low on time, and I'll be back. Well, you just scroll right down, and you'll see that right there. All right. I love working for you and doing this work, and this has been a very exciting reading. What I love about this is that every time I sit down to do one of these recordings, and I do it a fair number of times a year, I learn a lot of astrology. It is the most beautiful think on my feet type of thing, where the astrology wheel as a tool becomes more beautiful every time I look at it. The elegance of this scheme of themes arranged around a cycle of 12 basic intervals, and I have to say people make more and more sense as I do this. So anyway, some good news there. All right, thank you again. I'll catch you soon. Bye for now. Thank you.